is Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, and you're listening to a special weekend edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Free Radio Santa Cruz is having some startup difficulties at its new location, so I've been invited to pass on a few tapes of interviews, interesting interviews from the last few weeks that I've made, so you can hear them in their full extent without abridgment or interruption. Actually, I'm probably going to interrupt them and abridge them anyway, but you'll get to hear more than you usually do in my two-hour show from 10 to 12 Mondays and Fridays. And that show is still going on. It'll be happening even if I go to jail on May 16th, as looks like is likely to be the case, though by no means certain. There will be a caravan going up to San Francisco at noon on Thursday, May 16th, leaving from 809 Center Street, City Hall, in case you wish to come along. Hopefully there'll be room, or wish to donate your own vehicle, because we need vehicles to go up there. The issue again is the right to share free food. I was convicted in 1994 of serving free food in violation of a court injunction against Food Not Bombs, and we'll be going up to San Francisco in search of a sentence modification from the original judge who sentenced me to 2 months in jail. I've exhausted all my other appeals. The music you're hearing in the background is from the first day of the sleep out at City Hall. That first day was, I guess now, 72 days ago. Yes, 72 days ago. That sleep out has been going for over 2 months. Its objective, of course, to end the city's sleeping ban. And the guitarist has a good style and a good voice. The rest of us, of course, sound like a drunken lout, a lot of louts and so forth. But it's still happening at City Hall at 809 Center Street. So I encourage you to go on down there day or night and support those folks with coffee, with blankets, with just encouraging words. They're also trying to do outreach to other groups and other people. And there's talk of doing a march up to San Francisco, at least I'm talking about it. Of course, I may be doing more marching back and forth from the exercise yard to the commissary to my cell, but we'll see what goes on. First interview you're going to hear is with David Dumars, also known as BD. David, I actually describe in detail at the beginning of the interview so you can get a sense of what's happening. I've known him, gosh, I don't know how long, 3 years, 4 years, something like that. Anyway, here's David Dumars and I at the Coffee Roasting Company about a month and a half ago. So I'm in the Coffee Roasting Company with that notorious activist who's now doing community service on the weekends or some such thing for his...
No, it's not community service. It's work release.
Oh, work release. I see. I see. What is the difference between... Well, before we go any further, we're talking to BD, also known as L.A. Dave or David Dumars, an organizer for Refuse and Resist, who refused and resisted at one point back in... All right, you're very nice. Who is showing me a counterattack here, which is a publication by Refuse and Resist. We're sitting in the Coffee Roasted Company, which of course needs no further explanation. It was the scene of your pepper gassing, your second pepper gassing in 2 days in 1994, for essentially speaking up about a vigil that the police were harassing and attempting to disband across the streets for homeless rights. And you recently, I guess it was April 1st, you went to court thereabouts, and you got sentenced to some preposterous sentence for vandalism for writing the New World Order as a Third Reich odor on a newspaper box, a Sentinel box of all things. That's the Santa Cruz County Sentinel. And you're now doing work release around that. Is that correct?
No, the work release is not scheduled to start till the 1st of May, May Day. May Day.
What, you have a special work release program for May Day? You're going to be doing picketing as you release yourself? Or what's happening?
We'll figure something out. But
appealed, so...
You are going to appeal it?
Oh, absolutely.
And who's the attorney who's taking that appeal?
I don't know yet.
You dumped Ed Frye?
I don't know if he wants to do it. You know, I mean, I don't know if his heart's in it and stuff. And there is a question of when you work with lawyers and getting people who, like, really, you know, really want to take it on. Have you found a refuse and resist attorney flown in from New York City to assist you? No, that would be from Moscow.
Oh, from Moscow?
No, probably Beijing now. Beijing. Yeah. Deep in the forests of Peru with the Sendero Luminoso and their special English-speaking attorneys.
It's kind of difficult. I don't think most of the people in Peru speak English. I think they speak like Quechua or some indigenous
translator. We are bigoted here.
Hey, I'm for it.
How do we say Merry Christmas in Quechua?
I have no idea. I don't speak Quechua.
You better get up there. David, or BD as you prefer. What's happening in Santa Cruz in the next month, either around Refuse and Resist or other stuff that might be of interest to our radio listeners on civil rights for the poor issues that you think we could become aware of that we don't already know about?
Well, there's going to be a forum which you are going to be a part of. And I think that people should attend that. You know, from our perspective, from Refuse and Resist, the video that was taken of the attack by the police on me is going to be shown there, or parts of it, I think.
This is back in February of 1994,
right?
And this actual showing and the forum is going to be on April 24th at 7:30. Is it at Loudon Nelson or is it 7? Is it 7 or 7:30?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay. And
the forum run by the Revolutionary Coalition, supported by Huff and I guess the Common Thread Coalition, Dan Hopkins' group at City Hall, actually came off very well. And there's another forum coming up on May 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at Loudon Nelson Center. Again, the subjects have to do with the rights of the poor in Santa Cruz, or the progress of the sleep out at City Hall, and new strategies we're going to be following. And for those who want information on that, you can give a call to at 421-9250, 421-9250.
There's going to be not simply talking about the issue of homelessness. I believe that Dan will be able to do that in a very graphic, compelling
way. Dan Hopkins, who's in the 49th day of the sleep out at City Hall today.
Right. I think that the homeless need to speak for themselves. I think that's a great sort of thing. But I think that our approach is going to be more trying to connect it to other issues and looking at it from a very, very broad perspective and trying to develop the idea of resistance, you know, not in an isolated sort of, but, you know, trying to approach it from the question of broad and deep, you know, nationally. In fact, Keith McHenry? Yeah, Keith McHenry.
Food Not Bombs activist who is based in San Francisco.
Right. Is going to be at the Refuse and Resist conference in New York City. He's going to be awarded a Courageous Resistor Award.
What about that famous political prisoner, Robert Norris, who goes to hearing on May 3rd for serving free food and faces two months in jail?
Right. Well, see, I think that the thing about the Courageous Resistor Award isn't so much that other people don't do it. I think we know that other people do it. I know.
It's because I've already won the Most Irritating Man in Santa Cruz Award that you're passing me over. Is that right?
No. They actually passed me over also.
Oh, fine.
I know. I'm crying buckets of tears, you know.
Right. Well, the two of us could form our own dissident faction of Refuse and Resist.
That's it. Dissident factions.
Yes.
Yeah. Wouldn't do us a whole lot of good. That's a lot of what Refuse and Resist is anyway. But, you know, we could do it.
We can do it.
Anyway.
When is the next meeting of Refuse and Resist for those who wish to join in?
It won't be till after the conference.
When is the conference?
26, 27, 28.
Of April. So for all those who want, just jump in your cars or stick out your thumbs and head for New York City, right?
Well, one thing is that people should like tune in and find out what did go on. For example, one of the individuals that's going to be at the conference is this woman, Mae Johnson. She's a black woman from Chicago. And in Chicago, like other cities, they're destroying low-income housing, which I guess has directly relevant to the issue of homelessness.
Sure, they destroyed the low-income campground here in December, and we have the city's sleeping ban, so we have criminal status, everybody is poor outside. Is there a possibility, do you do other radio shows that mention refuse and resist updates? Have you done anything recently in the last week or two?
No, I haven't done anything recently.
Because I think that you might want to get an hour on the air to just do an update on what's happening with, well, your own perception of events around Santa Cruz, I know you have a perspective on international politics, which isn't shared by everyone in town, or even every radical in town.
It's quite controversial. I love it. It's great. Controversy is a great thing.
And so I think maybe you might want to get a radio show, or at least perhaps send in a tape, do a kind of a weekly half-hour tape or more on sort of updating people. For instance, the highlights of this conference that's coming up could be broadcast on the internet, and we could rebroadcast them on Free Radio Santa Cruz, assuming we are broadcasting, because as you know, Claudia Wilkins will come up with a decision for Free Radio Berkeley in the very near future, which may impact us, well, which will impact us directly.
It'll impact Santa Cruz one way or another, yes. Period. It will. Whatever the decision is. Hopefully, I'm very hopeful that that there'll be some backing off, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to tell, being a somewhat of a distant observer on that affair.
Your case is being appealed, you say, but you don't have an attorney, so there's no date. You can appeal at any time in the next few months, or when's your deadline?
Okay, well, what the situation with an appeal is that you file basically a one-page document stating the
grounds of the appeal.
And you don't even have to be particularly in depth. Just this, right? Very, very short. And then you have X amount of time, months, to file a written brief. The prosecutor then has essentially the same period of time to write a response.
Now, you are going to be appealing a work release sentence that will already be completed by the time the appeal gets through, right?
No, the sentence gets stayed.
I see. So you won't be doing your work release.
Hey. I say, you know, don't go down quietly.
So you are pretty determined to appeal then?
Oh, absolutely. We're definitely going to appeal it.
But do you have the legal force? We at the Sleep Out at Vigil, I should say, they at the Sleep Out Vigil, and those of us who support them, and I'm not there much, but except as a sort of a flyer writer, have had a lot of trouble finding legal support. Have you had any similar difficulties?
I tend not to have a whole lot of difficulties finding legal support.
You pay for it with hard currency, or you simply give them a winning smile, or invite them to, should we say, visit your headquarters in the Peruvian jungles? Just kidding about the headquarters.
We promised them high position in the new regime, and they say, oh goody, that's what I want.
You promised that Sendero Luminoso assassination squads will not, at least in the first cut, do the triage that, should we say, ends their part of the ruling class complicity.
No. The Sendero is works very very diligently with lawyers. In fact, it's very necessary in their particular circumstances. As serious as they are about going after you, Robert, and me, they are more serious about going after Sendero.
How is Mr. Guzman doing these days?
I don't know. He is still in solitary confinement. He still is.
Well,
in any case, that's a personal thing. I mean, that's my personal take, because refuse and resist does not deal with, you know, foreign policy issues, basically.
Refuse and Resist is an organization that's how old?
Nine years old.
And how long have you been associated with it?
Five.
And before you were with Refuse and Resist, were there other groups that you were working with?
Yeah. I mean,
what were those groups?
Well, one of the groups that I was working with was a group called the Unemployed Workers Organizing Committee, but this was back in the 70s. Other groups that I worked with a number. I worked with a bookstore, you know, a particular bookstore called Left Hand Books, right, which is kind of radical.
Los Angeles bookstore?
No, actually in Colorado. I mean, I'm a product of the 60s, right? I'm not.
Not a product of the 70s, the 80s, or the 90s.
Well, in a certain sense, yeah, but I'm not 18. Can I fool you into this? Well, how about 29?
You don't as young as you might, but you have a very beaming and winning smile, I've got to say that.
Yeah.
And also apparently a working watch. Are you hurried for time?
Yeah, I'm going to be sweating here pretty quick. But
Well, tell us...
What I'd like to say is what we are going to do nationally, I mean locally, I'd like to say two things. One is, in the immediate future, we're going to do a forum on the threat to fascism and kind of a reflection back on the Weimar Republic and what did develop in Germany.
That's the Republic in Germany immediately before the Nazi takeover. I'm going to interrupt you briefly to ask, because the first comment you made to me this morning had to do with a counter-terrorism bill. Would you like to sum up for the folks those little-known aspects of the national counter-terrorism bill, which is due to pass by Friday in honor of the Oklahoma City bombing, with both Clinton and Dole marching in unison with the same perverted drummer? Can you give us a sense of what the terrorism bill holds in store for us? That we, I know it talks about these essentially limiting habeas corpus appeals to one in the capital cases, or maybe even in any case, I'm not quite sure about that. And I know it has some reference to tagging explosives and so forth, which actually probably is rather non-controversial. But what, in your mind, are the most draconian provisions of this counterterrorism bill?
Well, first, kind of the main thrust of the counterterrorism bill is to go after immigrants, is to separate off people who are, who live in this country, quote unquote natives, people who are born here, citizens, from people who are in this country from around the world, and also from people who are still in other parts of the world. And that's kind of the main thrust of what they're trying to do. What they have in the bill is the ability for influential members in the executive branch of, or other branches also, but high in the government, to designate terrorists, basically any group, for a variety of reasons. This is not subject to judicial review. This is simply does not require an arrest, does not require a conviction. This is simply a designation in such a group is to,
in essence, food not bombs, or refuse and resist, or HOF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, could be designated as a terrorist group, and there will be no judicial review of this status.
None. Not only are the groups to be designated as being terrorists, that then puts any kind of support activity. For example, if Food Not Bombs was designated a terrorist because somebody in Food Not Bombs, not me, for sure, not me, went and spray painted on the side of a, say, highway.
Or perhaps a newspaper box.
Something to the effect of, you know, feed the people, you know, don't shoot the people, or something to that effect. You know, whatever, in the spirit of what Food Not Bombs does. Clearly a terrorist activity, and they were designated by the government as being terrorists, and contributing to Food Not Bombs then becomes also a criminal activity. In other words, if you give food to Food Not Bombs, then you are accomplice in the terrorist activity. Now what happens is that if you are designated to be a terrorist organization, they can come in, the FBI, and what they're doing with this is that they are accentuating the power specifically of federal law enforcement, okay, which of course will filter down. But nevertheless, the point is that what they're doing is that they're unleashing all kinds of new ways to have wiretaps. We know, of course, based on their history, they would never use that on a group like Refuse and Resist or Food Not Bombs or HUF. You know, I mean, we're on such friendly terms with the FBI, you know, they would use that for us.
Certainly a sarcastic comment on your part.
Yeah. Anyway.
Now, wasn't that provision, in fact, removed from the bill at the behest of the American Rifle Association? That, in fact, was the legal tender for their support. That's what I read in the, I guess it was yesterday's Chronicle, or yesterday's Mercury, today's Mercury News, I believe it was, stated that initially, this bill got stalled in the House of Representatives at the national level because the American Rifle Association and the American Civil Liberties Union teamed up to say, no way, and we had the right-wingers and the liberals saying, forget it, Clinton, you may want this for your birthday, but you're going to have to wait. And now, however, what's happened is the American Rifle Association has gotten that, for some reason, they don't want the wiretap provision, maybe they're afraid of I don't know, the Aryan Nation being wiretapped or something?
I don't think that the Aryan Nation wants to be wiretapped.
Nor do I, for that matter.
Right.
So we have something in common.
I won't comment on that either, but...
I have a copy of Mein Kampf.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Just kidding about that, folks. I would never have such a banned book.
I think people should read it, actually. People should take a very serious look at what the Nazis were really all about.
Hitler's speeches are more interesting than his book Mein Kampf, in my opinion, but who am I to second-guess the Führer?
Yeah. Anyway.
His birthday, by the way, is April 20th, in case you wanted to have some sort of celebration.
By flags or something? I don't know.
Perhaps you could burn an American flag, a Weimar flag, and a Federal Republic of Germany flag all at once.
Or even a Nazi flag.
Swastika. You could show that the Nazis have abandoned their socialist roots.
So,
just kidding, folks.
Yeah.
A little humor here.
After all, the National Socialist Party.
Well, there was a radical wing of the National Socialist Party headed by Röhm and the Strasser brothers who wanted, municipalization of the department stores, who wanted socialist activities, who wanted the stormtroopers, in essence, to expropriate property for the benefit of the masses. But they were sidelined in favor of the more conservative banking elements. The Ludendorff group might...
For this kind of a discussion, you should come to this
New York conference.
To the local forum that we're going to have on the rise of fascism.
That will be again. What time and where?
We haven't set up the exact.
How can people contact Refuse and Resist to get information around this?
Get a hold of our good friend Robert Norris down at the radio station.
Call 423-4833 if anybody in the world is interested in Refuse and Resist. And I will pass on a message to the secret phone line of David Duke. In the Peruvian jungles, yes.
Okay, well anyway, to get back to the...
With our micro-broadcasting, yes.
Yeah, from Radio Free Santa Cruz at...
Beep, 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 beep.
To get back to the anti-terrorist bill,
are we so?
What occurs then once you're designated to be a terrorist organization or an accomplice of a terrorist organization? The FBI can come into your place or into your business establishment or into your home or wherever, and take anything, whatever they designate to be able to be used for terrorist activities: money,
pencils, pens, computers.
Plumbing houses would be rife with terrorist electronic stores. Hey, terrorist, things like potatoes, bananas, anything that can be used in a terrorist act or can be used to free up other material or resources for terrorism.
Actually read the whole bill.
Yeah, I've read it. But the interesting part of it is that the conference bill is even worse than the bill that I've read. And it's the conference bill that is actually being voted on now.
Well, I understand there were two bills. There was a bill in the Senate which was utterly horrible, worse than the conference bill. There was a bill in the House that was somewhat better than the conference bill. And then there's the conference bill which re-includes the habeas corpus provision that was deleted in the House. It re-includes... a couple of other provisions. It doesn't include the wiretapping, as I understand it. Is that your understanding, that they cut out the wiretapping in order to, Bob, we mentioned this, to appease the American Rifle Association?
My understanding is the conference reinstituted the wiretapping. Yeah. And the reason that's my understanding at this point, I obviously have not read it. It's only 2 days, and most of the senators and the House members that are going to vote on it have not read it either.
Right.
But it is from the mass media, and my source in particular is KPFA. In any case, the point is that, for example, if some terrorist Palestinian group is designated to be terrorist, and you give food to the Palestinian group or money,
right,
it can be seized, because what the bill says is that they can use the food and the money to free up resources to buy bombs and guns.
So it's also true, however, that you can be prosecuted for donating money, or just that your money can be seized?
You can be prosecuted for donating money. Lawyers can be prosecuted for defending clients. And the other thing is that once a group has been designated to be terrorist, then the right to jury trial is stripped from them.
Oh, really?
here's an interesting article in today's San Jose Mercury News about the terrorism bill. Again, it says it would impose tough new standards for habeas corpus petitions and set new and stringent deadlines on when such petitions could be filed. It would also make it impossible for most prisoners, both on and off death row, to file more than one habeas corpus appeal. Clinton had proposed legislation that included provisions on enlarging the authority of federal agents to wiretap suspects and permitting law enforcement officials to consult with the military in certain cases. Those measures were dropped by Congress after the National Rifle Association lobbied heavily against them, arguing they were too intrusive. The legislation adopted Wednesday, that's yesterday, we're talking on the 18th here, would fulfill a drive begun by conservatives that began under President Reagan to rewrite the rules governing habeas corpus. And again, most of the focus around this bill has been on habeas corpus, but I think that is a mistaken focus. Certainly, it denies the rights of people in prisons. I guess we're talking, again, I'm not clear whether we're talking only capital cases, probably talking all cases.
All cases.
So that's a very significant fact if you are in federal prison, but perhaps if you're in any prison. I know habeas corpus is
Habeas corpus is critical in terms of taking any appeal from a state court into a federal court.
So in fact, this affects people in all 50 states who want to bypass local corruption, local discrimination, reactionary judges, or simply inappropriate trials and decisions.
If you look at this bill in conjunction with, for example, three strikes, it becomes very ominous.
So, I guess by the time we're talking on Friday and hearing this tape tomorrow, I suspect the bill will be law, or at least the bill will be passed by both houses of Congress.
Well, look, it may. Okay.
Yeah.
Then I think there's a really good possibility that it'll be passed based on these liberal Democrats who everybody has such a warm and fuzzy feeling about how they're on our side.
The Clintonians as well.
Not just the Clintonians, the Feinsteins and the Barbara Boxers.
And the Bidens.
Let's talk about Barbara Boxer just for a moment.
Barbara Boxer, of course, our California senator.
The most liberal of liberals, right?
Right.
Let us
favor increasing marijuana penalties, which, by the way, is also on the rise, you know, from reading yesterday's paper. Cultivation having a kilo of marijuana will become a 5-year offense with no drug diversion program. State law.
Let's take a look at what Barbara Boxer's role in this thing was in. Okay. Contribution to the debate in Congress as shown on C-SPAN.
Okay. Which you saw.
Yeah. Was that she called for an extension of the period of time that the government can actually have to sue suspected terrorist organizations and accomplices. She wanted to extend the deadline past which, you know, the ability to sue or prosecute becomes.
And the real question to me also, if you are actually objectively considering this bill, let's say we're sitting in the Congress, is what are existing laws that deal with, let's say, terrorist groups, like the Klan, let's say. You have a Klan or groups to the right of the Klan who are actually engaging in assassinations and things of this sort.
You mean like
the U.S. government?
The U.S. government.
Right, the U.S. government. But for argument's sake, let's talk about a private organization that's, say, drawing inspiration, personnel, and weapons from the U.S. government, but is not officially a part of the government. Let's say one of the contract services that, for instance, was hired to take out Castro in the early 60s, or at least that's been reputed to be the case.
Or Air America or something like that.
Yeah, sort of the mafiosi, you know, as American as apple pie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, groups like this, there are some who would argue, well, they should be controlled by terrorism legislation. What laws are currently on the books that if we had an administration that had the will to go after such groups, they could use?
Laws against murder, robbery, you know. The way they went after the people that did all this stuff around the Iran-Contra stuff was that Congress had made it illegal to basically to funnel money to Iran.
right? They had passed certain laws that made the transfer of money and resources to various groups and organizations that, I mean,
you're really on top of the current terrorism laws. You're saying that, I mean, I'm sure that there are laws regarding conspiracies to deprive people of their civil rights, for example.
Absolutely.
Those date from the Reconstruction era in the 1860s and 70s.
Sure. In the 1950s and even in the 1960s, they passed all kinds of laws like that. Now, the question is, you know, for a group like some of the groups that you're speaking of, why does the government need to wiretap, for example, you know, the Aryan Nation, or wiretap some of these other groups that you're talking about? That
Korean interests, perhaps?
Maybe Cuban groups or whatever. I mean, they've got active agents inside those groups. They know what's going on all the time. I mean, that's a fact. And
we found recently that it was an FBI agent who was involved in the murders of, Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodwin back in 1964, when those three civil rights leaders were killed and then buried in a dam down in Mississippi.
Right.
Involved in the sense that he knew about it.
The FBI was involved in directing the Klans and the other paramilitaries to intercept the Freedom Riders in 1963.
And indeed, in the more recently, in the Greensboro confrontation between the Nazis and the Communists in 1979, when, five Communists were shot by extreme right-wing groups, the FBI not only knew about it, but I understand they supplied some of the weapons. I mean,
They supplied the weapons, they told them where they were going to be, they told them how to get there, and in fact, they had an agent leading them to the anti-Klan demonstrators. Subsequently, the people who shot these anti-Klan demonstrators on national TV, I might add, were acquitted of all charges.
Which, of course, is, it should be here in America. You don't want to have this kind of thing going around. I mean, best to keep it quiet.
What the hell?
Just kidding, folks. But unfortunately, it was no joke for the families of the dead communist people.
Yeah.
So, we have the terrorism bill hustling down the pike at breakneck speed. We have Barbara Boxer's role. You mentioned that. Have you seen any debates on CNN about those who actually oppose the terrorism bill? Any statements?
Yes, actually, I have.
And who opposes
it? Enough.
Helms, perhaps?
Yes, Jesse Helms. No, actually, he does. He supports it. But the senator from New York, Moynihan, actually said, this is not something that we should be supporting, right? And other kinds of opposition is surfacing. For example, when KPFA contacted Barbara Boxer to get the final copy of the bill as it was developed out of conference, couldn't get. They wouldn't send it. And in fact, people, when they called Barbara Boxer's office to oppose the bill, were told, or were asked, well, what's the matter? Do you support terrorism?
Right.
On the other hand, when they contacted Ron Dellums, you know, they got a copy of the bill the same day.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so there's, and I am not a supporter of any elected official in the National Congress, period.
But you do, for example, support me or Mike Rutkin, one of your heroes.
Not likely. But what I do think is that people should not simply say, well, because it's kind of the 11th hour, we should sit back and take this. I think that there's a number of things that need to be done. First of all, as is a contradiction here in Santa Cruz, as you know, these things need to be challenged in the court, right? I mean, they simply do. The ACLU needs to challenge it. And the only way that these kinds of challenges are going to go down is if people, you know, who are not lawyers, who are not professionals necessarily, although those people too, I mean, raise a serious stink about this shit. And it's never too late. I would suggest that the rise of fascism in Germany was not inevitable. No, you don't. And in fact, throughout the reign of fascism in Germany and the areas that they conquered, resistance to that never stopped. It never ended. You don't hear about it a lot, but it never ended. Okay? And it is not too late. It is never too late. Ever. Period.
Well, of course, there's the famous resistance of the Danish king and the Danish people, who, when they were, it was was declared that Jews had to wear stars, the Danish king put on a star, and suddenly all the Danes were wearing stars,
right.
And then they, of course, shipped the Jews out by boat to Norway very quickly. But that, unfortunately, is more an exception than the rule. In fact, in many cases, you have collaborators who rose up, like the Croats, like the French right-wingers. In fact, more recently, there's been a book, which you probably have read about, which shows that the major concentration camp folks were not elite SS troops, but ordinary German citizens who volunteered to help.
You should come and participate in this discussion on the Nazis, because that's very true. The fact of the matter is that things like the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was much more the exception, but less of an exception than you might think. Now, if we reflect back on that and we say, well, okay, there's a certain amount of truth to the fact that it was an more exception, but less of an exception, what conclusions do you draw? That we can't win, or that we better do a lot better than we're doing right now?
Well, I think the conclusion is that drinking coffee and staying out of trouble is probably our best course of action. After all, don't upset the apple cart. Why risk my ass? And I'm terribly busy, although I would like to help.
Well, on that note, all I would like to say that the second thing that Refuse and Resist is going to be participating in the very near future, is the third annual 4th of July flag burning celebration at the boardwalk in Santa Cruz.
In fact, a brief historical note, you have, on two prior 4th of Julys, tested out your matches and your the flammability of the flag that you had in question by, shall we say, uniting the two in a kind of conflagration of passion.
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting scientific experiment. I think we'll probably get a full spread in Scientific American, in the August issue.
In 94, you were arrested under obscure fire department regulation violations, taken to court, and then eventually charges were dropped after Ed Fry began inquiring rather deeply into whether this was selective enforcement, whether anybody else in the history of Santa Cruz had ever been targeted under these obscure regulations, which involved having gasoline in a public area when you had lighter fluid or some such thing?
Yeah, actually what we found out was that there had been some people arrested on these obscure laws. They happened to be the homeless who were lighting fires under the bridge to stay warm at night.
Huh.
So it was a
sideline.
It was, it's a real interesting kind of thing. But yeah, we did find out that as soon as you found out that, the well-to-do on the Upper West Side were not arrested for almost damn well burning the neighborhood down, but the homeless under the bridge at night were being cited and arrested and fined for having campfires to stay warm at night, then the city said, we just don't want to deal with these issues, so they dropped the charges.
And that was, and you had the volunteer help of Attorney Ed Fry?
Yeah.
Seemingly a man who gets involved in local civil liberties issues even without great remunerative return.
Yeah, he's not a real rich kind of guy.
Right. Rich in principles, poor in shekels, as we say. Then in 95, you burned another flag, and this time you were more ignored than the first time.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to ignore us this time around.
Well, we'll keep abreast of events. Any final comments? If people want to contact you, they can leave a message at my number, 423-4833, for David Dumars of Refuse and Resist. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just we are going to come out with a flyer and an announcement on when this forum's going to be. It will be probably the third or the last weekend of May.
Okay. This is a forum on fascism in the U.S. and how to prevent it.
This forum will be there will be a couple of presentations, but there will be a focus on the anti-terrorism bill. There will be a reflection back on what did occur in the Weimar and how fascism did and what did develop in Germany. Okay, and we will reflect on the current situation in the United States. I think that there is a couple things to be said. One is there are some striking similarities. Two is there are some striking differences. And three is it was not inevitable in Germany, and it is not inevitable in this country.
You might also want to look into fascism and more recent fascism in places like Myanmar, also known as Burma, in recent African countries, Guatemala,
Iran,
China, Iraq. Fascism is just a strange, maybe a
Peru.
Peru. or red fascism too in the jungles of Peru, but that's another story.
That's an issue that can be raised.
Yeah.
Come to the forum and raise it up, because we do, you know, it's a freewheeling kind of thing. We love the controversy and discussion.
And you've been listening to David Dumars on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Thank you, David. I'm talking to
Eric Jacobs.
And Eric, you say you just got out of jail. It's about 5 to 11 on Thursday, April 18th, and we're here on Pacific Avenue. What happened?
Well, I was walking up on campus and checking out to see what was going on, and I was trying to make my way off campus to walk back in town, and the police picked me up and put me in jail overnight.
And what was the reason that they did that?
I don't know.
Did they have a warrant for you?
And they had, well, they gave me a warrant.
I mean, let's put it this way. Did they claim that there was an outstanding warrant when they arrested you?
Yeah, for San Rafael Police Department.
And so then they released you rather than say, send you north to San Rafael.
Right.
And what was the charge?
And I didn't get any food either.
Well,
I had nothing to eat.
They're simply trying to save the taxpayer valuable money.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
I received Social Security income.
So, do you have a court date, or has the entire charge been dropped?
Yeah, I have a court date.
So, but this is a charge in San Rafael, right? Or is it a new charge here in Santa Cruz?
I don't know. I think we'll figure it out once we get there.
Your last name is?
Jacobs.
And when is your court date?
I don't know. I got it on a piece of paper in my pocket.
Uh-huh.
It's hidden away.
Okay, well, you might give a call.
I'm going to show my brother when I get back to Oakland. David.
Any idea what happened in San Rafael to produce the warrant?
Not really.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Talking to graphic artist Chris. And Chris, you're here at one of the last remaining fenced areas where it's legal to sit down, actually leaning against a wall on Pacific Avenue. There's, of course, a downtown ordinance makes it legal to sit 10 feet from a shop. And you have here a rather interesting graphic design. How would you describe it?
Psychedelic modern abstract.
And you do this for fun or for profit or both?
Both.
You sell these things or give them away for donations?
Give them away for donations, pretty much. Some of them go into galleries, and I try and get, you know, a decent, you know, I try to get what they're worth, you know. I don't know.
Well, it's unusual. It's a combination of abstract patterns superimposing each other, like keyholes, circles, triangles, a parrot's beak and head, and with very interesting series of contrasting colors. You have a sign that says, please help, spare anything at all for food and shelter, thank you. Patty Saponi supporter is not applicable. You're referring, of course, to Lieutenant Saponi, who is Santa Cruz police higher up, who's responsible for the New Year's debacle of 1994, where police attacked the town clock drummers, precipitating really the only full-scale riot I've ever seen in downtown Santa Cruz. What is it with Patty Saponi that annoys you?
It's just the way he handles things.
We're talking he or she, because Patty is a woman.
Yeah, she. Sorry.
Now, what exactly have you noticed about Officer, I should say, Lieutenant Saponi, that you feel should be corrected?
Attitude.
And so you've had contacts with Lieutenant Saponi that you found unpleasant?
Not me entirely, but friends.
And what kind of contacts were those?
Just harassment, you know, on people that don't need it. Most of the police around here will harass people that can't afford to be harassed rather than harassing the people that can't afford it. I don't know.
What sort of harassment have your friends suffered? Or what kind of alleged offenses?
We'll get, like, you know, we're homeless, we get jaywalking tickets, and at the same time they're giving us a ticket, 12 other people with suits and ties will jaywalk and they won't say anything to them. You know, just they pick and choose who they're gonna
ticket.
Yeah.
How many people in the last month have you noticed among your friends have gotten such harassment tickets?
At least 4 or 5 people.
And what do they usually do with these tickets? Do they go to court? Do they?
They usually just go to court for them and either get community hours or jail time. And it's just a waste of time. Why fill up jail cells with jaywalking tickets and, you know, stuff like that when you can be actually doing something, busting, you know, crack dealers or, you know, drug dealers or something.
How old are you, Chris?
25.
And how old are your friends predominantly who are ticketed? Is there usual? Is there an age thing? Is it a homeless thing?
I'd say it's more of a homeless thing than an age thing.
Now, as an observer of the scene on the streets, and I frequently see you here, have you noticed a change in or an increase in the homeless population with the closing of the Winter Armory shelter on March 15th or thereabouts?
Not really. I've seen more of a change of homeless people since the dead died, since Jerry, you know, ended his career. There's more people on the streets, but they are, I don't know, they all sell, you know, a lot of them sell drugs, and they just, I disagree with their patterns of life, you know. I just don't think that the best way of doing life is selling drugs and growing dreads and panhandling for drugs. It's not, you know, it just messes it up for all of us that are actually trying to do something with our lives.
You heard about the Drum Out the Drummers law, which will increase the hours under which people playing drums throughout Santa Cruz, or any percussion instruments for that matter, between 8 in the evening and 10 in the morning can be cited if anyone indoors has a complaint. What's your view on that law as a man who spends a lot of time on the streets?
I see no problems in that. I see them, you know, a lot of the drummers around here try to find the places that are the loudest to play instead of, you know, just, I don't know, it depends. I mean, some of the people are really decent and they're just, you know, musicians that are trying to make it, and the other ones are just trying to disturb the peace and make trouble for themselves.
Now, you've also had some encounters, and we've talked about this before, with some merchants, particularly one, Stuart Martin, who's the what we call him, not the owner, but certainly a manager of the ID business in the ID building, which is about a half a block away from where we're sitting here on the sidewalk. Have you had any further encounters with Mr. Martin? I believe several months ago you had a situation where he said to you that all homeless people were thieves, harassed you and your girlfriend, shoved you on the sidewalk, and accused you of shoplifting, something like that effect, and indeed, in your view, falsely accused you.
Definitely falsely accused. I haven't had any trouble from him lately. I stay away from the store, you know. I see him on the street. I don't say anything to him. I just keep my distance. I get a majority of stuff from a lot of the business people around here. They all say that the homeless people and the panhandlers are ruining their business, but they don't want to give us jobs. And if they'd give us jobs, then we wouldn't be out here panhandling.
Do you see that there's been an increase in panhandling in the last few months? Has it stayed steady? I don't see many panhandlers around as we're sitting here. What's your perception of that?
There's actually more, and it's kind of sad because